Hi, my name is Todd Henry. I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's me, Mike Vardy, and Todd Henry is returning for another productive conversation, which I can say because every time Todd has joined me on the program, the conversations have been productive. He's the author of several books, and his latest book, The Daily Creative, is what we talk about today. We talk about what it was like to put this book together, as well as where it fits in his overall body of work. And then we walk through how you should go through the book, and then we take certain passages of the book and discuss them. It's a fun and productive conversation that you don't want to miss. And we kick it off by talking about, of course, every time I talk to Todd, we talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Time for a productive conversation with Todd Henry. Enjoy. Todd Henry, it's great to have you back on the program again. It's been a while since we've chatted. I think it was when Louder With Words came out, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, boy, that was a while ago. That was, I guess, 6 years ago, 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's great to be back.
You've had a real body of work with the books you've put out over the years. And the latest book is, it just came out as we're recording this. It's called The Daily Creative, A Practical Guide for Staying Prolific, Brilliant, and Healthy. So the first thing I want to bring up as we get into this conversation is, you know, why does this book go here in your overall oeuvre of the work you've done? Because you've written, you know, Die Empty, again, Louder Than Words, The Accidental Creative. It draws me to this video that we'll actually link to in the show notes of Quentin Tarantino's like 10 films, right? Like the whole, like, he's only going to do 10 films and it's the body of work that matters. So like, where does this fit in to your body of work? Like, is it more of the through line that's been consistent, or is it like, this is the time to put this out there? Like, I'm just curious about your mindset around this.
Well, the answer is yes, actually. Both of those things are correct statements. So let me explain. First of all, this book is really an encapsulation of the last 15 years of my life and my work. So all of my other books, I've written 5 other books at this point, and all of them were, you know, that sort of 300-page big idea business book about creativity or leadership or collaboration or, you know, putting your best work into the world. And each of them kind of occupies its own space. You know, each one sort of addresses a specific idea. What I wanted to do is create something that encapsulated all of those ideas and gave people practical, daily, bite-sized insights from all of those books and challenge them to apply them on a daily basis. You know, the last thing that you want to do when someone is drowning is toss them a 300-page manual about how to swim better. And I really feel like, you know, for many of us, the last couple of years, we've been not so much swimming, but drowning in the uncertainty and a lot of what's been thrown at us globally, you know, through the pandemic and economically and what's going on in the marketplace. And, you know, we're all trying to navigate our way to the next place, whatever that looks like. So what I wanted to do is just give people a really simple, practical guidebook that would not teach them a bunch of new things, but probably remind them of some things that they already know or suspect, but maybe either didn't have language for or had forgotten. And so they're swimming, they're trying to swim, but they're kind of drowning. And I just wanted to toss them a couple of little life preservers and say, hey, remember this thing about, you know, building study time into your life so that you have stimulus to come up with ideas. Hey, remember this thing about how important it is to understand the unique value you bring and what is the unique value and how can you apply that to your work today? You know, things like that. Those are things we all know, but we often forget in the hustle and bustle of life, especially over the last couple of years.
And actually, that brings up a really good follow-up question. You know, as I opened the book, or in this case, digitally, looked at the book in my Kindle, I noticed that this book is designed to be read in a very specific way. It's interesting. I just had a conversation with John Baird and Edward Sullivan, who wrote the book Leading with Heart, and they had a very specific way they wanted to read the book that you know, I wanted to highlight. You've done the same. Can you explain?
Yeah. So one of the things that has been a part of my study time for the last 20 years are daily readers, you know, books that I sort of dip into every day a little bit, maybe take about, you know, 2 to 5 minutes to interact with, but that always provide me with some kind of insight, some kind of application for the day. And because of my love for that format, I decided to turn this book into a daily reader. We had a lot of discussions at the beginning about, you know, do we want to make it like, okay, week one, day two, day three, day four. So you could sort of start at the beginning, regardless of what day you started on. And I said, no, I don't want that. What I want to do is create a reader where we have thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of creative professionals all over the world reading and thinking about the same thing on the same day. Because I think that there's some magic that happens when you have a lot of people thinking about the same thing, applying the same thing, especially if you're on a team that's doing this together. It really creates a kind of a cadence of health, you know, within the organization. And so it's designed to be read every day, a little bit at a time. It's designed to be read multiple times, because by the time you get back to September, we're recording this on September 15th, by the time you get back to this day next year, you're going to be a different person. So today's entry might not strike you profoundly today, but next year it's going to be the most profound thing you've ever read in your life, you know? And so it's designed to be that kind of constant companion for people who have to solve problems every day. And that was a very intentional decision. Also, the other thing that's unique about it is we didn't write it with any specific themes in mind, meaning it's not like this week is focus week, next week is time week. Instead, we wanted to surprise people every day, because that's how life comes at us. You know, it's not like, oh, this week I get to just, you know, deal with focus in my life and work. No, I mean, we're constantly being bombarded with new things. And so we wanted each day to feel a little bit like a package that they were opening, you know, the reader was opening every day. And that was intentional on my part as well. I am reading this book along with everyone else who's reading it right now, because I realized, you know, and I'm sure you've done the same thing many times with your work. I created the book that I needed right now. And so it's been really helpful to me. Even today's entry was about cover bands.
I was just going to get to that. Yeah. I was just going to get to that, because I'm like, well, today's entry is about cover bands don't change the world. And I'm like, that's been your like signature sign off for the podcast, that, you know, and like cover bands don't change the world, you know. Let's touch on that. I want to go through some of the entries. And I want to start with that one. So let's start with today. If someone's if just for those that are listening to this publicly, we're recording this live for the members of my Time Crafting Trust community. We'll have a link in the show notes on how you can join that community if you'd like. But today is September 15th, and the entry is cover bands don't, you know, it's cover bands don't change the world. So can you kind of dive into that a little bit? Because it's been a signature, you know, phrase of yours for all the time I've known you.
It has. I mean, that's the way I've signed off the Accidental Creative Podcast since 2005, right? So 17 years now, we've been closing the podcast with that phrase. I've missed it a couple of times, and people always remind me when I miss it. They're like, hey, I didn't hear that at the end. That's not to say that cover bands don't have value. For those who don't know, a cover band is a band that plays other people's music, right? So think, you know, dance, party bands, things like that. You know, you go in, they play all the greatest hits, everything's fine. It's not that they don't add value. They serve a purpose for sure. But people don't remember the band, they remember the music. The music is what really transformed the world. That's the unique value that was put into the world, the something unique that somebody created. Cover bands are people who just are mimicking that value that other people have already created at some point. And people always say, well, what about the Beatles? The Beatles were a cover band. Well, yeah, they were at first, but they eventually navigated their way into being an original music band that obviously transformed the world. And now there are all these Beatles cover bands, right? Copying the value that they created. That phrase is really just designed to remind people there is something unique that you offer the world. There's some unique perspective, combination of passion, skills, experiences that you bring to the world that other people are unable to bring. They're never going to be able to bring it, because you have a unique perspective and a unique platform to be able to do that. So if you don't bring it to the world, nobody's going to bring it to the world. And so that phrase for me just encapsulates that sentiment of, we all have to figure out, what is the unique value that I bring to the marketplace or to the people around me? And how can I consistently bring that every single day? By the way, that's not something you sit around and think about and come up with. It's something you're going to observe over time. It's a pattern that will play out in your life and your work. It develops like film in a dark room, not like an instant photo. So if we pay attention to the patterns, over time we can begin to discover those unique things that we bring and begin to apply them more consistently.
And it's interesting, because you bring up like the idea of cover bands. There's some cover bands, to your point, that they generally don't change the world, but there's some bands that have decided to take covers and throw their own unique spin on them and be, yeah, like Walk Off the Earth, for example, Dred Zeppelin back in the day, you know, like, and that's an, or even hell, Weird Al Yankovic. I mean, to a degree that would be, but to your point, it's the rotes. It's when it's too rote, when you don't add your own spin to it, when you don't. And all of those artists that I just mentioned did create their own music. It was almost like it was a vessel for them initially.
Absolutely. So playing covers is not the same thing as being a cover band, right? So everybody over time, the way that we grow creatively in our craft, whatever our craft is, if we're a marketer, if we're a designer, if we're whatever, the way that we grow is by emulating other people. We copy other people in order to develop the basic chops that we need in order to be able to do our work. At some point, though, we have to diverge. We have to move off in a new direction, begin adding our unique perspective, our unique value, if we want to build that body of work that stands as a reflection of us, not just as a sort of a copycat of someone else. So that's a great example. I mean, someone can, you know, most great artists start off as cover bands because they're building the basic platform. I mean, Steve Earle said, basically all we did was rewrite the same songs over and over and over again until we found our voice, right? Yeah. We rewrote other people's songs. Stephen King talked about how he would copy Combat Casey comics into little blue notebooks. He would write them word for word and just copy, you know, what somebody else had already written as a way of sort of absorbing what great language, great prose, great flow feels like. There's nothing wrong with that, but at some point we have to step out and begin doing our own thing.
Well, yeah, it's like what's that Bruce Lee quote? Absorb what's useful, discard what isn't, add your own. Like in a lot of ways. Now I want to let's go back to the dates though. So as you go through each, I'm gonna rhyme off a couple of dates that mean something to me as I went through the book. So one is my birthday, July 3rd, and peace was what came up, and. The way the book is written, just to give everybody a sense, it's not just like, you know, like those flip a day calendar kind of things where it's like just a quote or something like that. Like there's something there. So when you talked about peace, and again, you brought this up earlier, you don't always remember what you wrote. You always have to revisit it. When you think about peace, you brought up something that, maybe people don't think about peace from that angle, especially when it comes to the aspect of creativity. So can we dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, and by the way, there are 366 entries. So sooner or later, you're probably going to stumble across one of them. Like, I don't remember what I wrote about that, but I do remember this because it's something I teach very often, which is that peace is when most people say, I want peace. What they really mean is I want you to do things the way I want you to do them. And I want us to not have any conflict. That's not peace. Peace is order. Peace means that things are put in order and that there's a kind of a wholeness, a health to our world. And that's the kind of peace we should be pursuing in our work, which is kind of an order or a kind of a health. In Hebrew tradition, the word shalom, right, is this word peace, which it means more than just I have everything the way I want it and don't mess it up, don't upset the apple cart, which is how we often talk about peace. What we really want is order, which means that things are in an ordered place. There's a kind of a wholeness and a health. And that's the kind of peace we should pursue in our life, in our work, in our systems, in our creating. I think that's really what we're aiming for.
I'm going to move on to another one. February 13th. Sound familiar? Do you remember this one? The one where you're talking about like the things that sound familiar and how you can leverage that? Let's talk about that one.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the best ideas for our work are not going to come from staring harder at the problem. They're going to come from looking outside of the area around the problem. And sometimes one of the best ways to do that is to look at similar problems, other problems that have been solved in the past by other people, to begin exploring sympathies and affinities, you know. So who else has solved a problem like this? How did they do it? What can I learn from that? What can I apply to the problem? And also, by the way, some of your best ideas are going to be ideas maybe you've already had in the past and you don't even think about because you're not paying attention to them. Maybe they're problems that you came up with solutions for, you know, a long time ago, but you discarded into the creative trash heap. You discarded all of these great ideas. Maybe it's time to go back and dig some of those up and ask, hey, might some of these help me solve this problem? Again, nothing brand new, but these are things that we know that we probably should do, but we often forget about when we're in the hustle and bustle of daily life and work.
Okay, so here's because that's happened to me. Like ideas that I've brought to that I've let go, and then all of a sudden they come back around. I'm like, wait a minute, I had that idea before, but I didn't do anything with it. That's a signal. So let me ask you, was this book something that came up a long time ago and it revisited, like it reared its head and you're like, I need to... Oh, now is the time. Now is the, like, did it present itself on multiple occasions, or was it just, you know, at the right place at the right time? And to me, I think it, I think I know the answer, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So it's both. The answer is both. Yes, I've had this idea for a long time, but it's taken me a while to build to the place where I have a body of work that's substantial enough, where I have a wide enough range of things I can draw from to do 366 entries, right? Yeah. So the answer is kind of both. What I'm really excited about with this book is I have something to talk about every single day. You know, as you know very well, like when you write a book, it's basically, here's the big idea of the book, and you give the same talking points over and over again. For me, herding tigers was stability and challenge, and here's how we lose trust with our team, and here's how we build trust with the team, and here's how we protect time and energy, and that's fine. But it was a very finite set of ideas. You know, with this book, it's like I open it up every day and I'm like, oh, today it's cover bands. You know, Yesterday it was something else. Tomorrow's going to be something else. And it's great because it feels like I have something new that I can kind of trumpet and talk about every single day. And it's all drawn from the larger scope of my body of work.
And 2 days ago, you talked about focus, function, and fire on September 13th. Yeah. That was something that I don't ever think I've heard you talk about before, or if I have, it again, you've been so prolific that it might have just flown by. So can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So those are the three. I wrote about this in Herding Tigers, actually, my book about creative leadership. These are the three areas that leaders are specifically responsible for, but also that we as creative pros have to monitor. So focus is how we allocate our finite attention, how we define the problems that we're trying to solve. Function is how we accomplish those problems. So our systems, metrics, mechanisms by which we accomplish the problems. And fire is the deeper why or the grand vision within which those problems fit. When there is a misalignment between those three elements, which by the way, I had an interesting insight the other day when I was reading this, I realized, oh, there are a couple of areas of my life where these three things are not aligned properly. So again, back to the like doctor, take your own medicine, doctor, heal yourself kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So when you have, for example, when you have a lack a deep understanding of the fire part, the why part, the deeper sense of why this matters, what's fueling and firing this work in your life, often what I find is my function piece becomes unnecessarily complex. I'm spinning my wheels. I'm inventing things. I'm inventing work because I'm trying to get to the end goal, but I don't understand really how that problem nests within a deeper sense of why I'm doing my work to begin with. And so things become needlessly complex. When I lack focus, the same thing happens. But when I lack focus, I'm not allocating my attention to the right place, or I'm not defining the problem properly, I lose sense of my deeper why, my deeper sense of purpose, and why I'm doing the work to begin with. So simply sitting down and consistently asking yourself, what problems am I largely accountable for solving right now? Because our minds aren't wired to do projects. Our minds are wired to solve problems. You know, they didn't, you know, nobody thousands of years ago was saying, you know, oh, look, there's a cave. I think I should start a project. Where's my tablet that I can chisel a task list into? No, they're thinking, I'm hungry, I'm cold, I need a place to hide because there's something about to eat me. That cave looks like a great place to solve that problem. You know, that's what we're wired to do, to solve problems. So if we don't clearly understand the problems we're solving every day, then we're going to get off the rails. If we don't have systems in place that are complex enough to support our ambitions from an infrastructure standpoint, but simple enough that they don't provide needless hurdles to jump. And if we don't have a deeper sense of how that work fits within the grander scheme of why we're on this planet, but also just why we're doing this work, why we're solving this problem to begin with, then we're going to struggle. So just sitting down and analyzing those three things, focus, function, fire, can really help ensure that you're putting your finite resources in the right place.
This actually, as you're sharing this, it had me thinking about this idea of tempering ambition. You're creative. You're prolific. You've been putting together. I mean, it's not like you're not a fountain of ideas. Things have come. I mean, you wrote, like you said, 366 days worth of, you know, creative medicine, for lack of a better term. I'll just, that's my wording, not yours. But when I think about the book Die Empty and the idea of like, you know, when you're no longer here, you should have, the tank should be empty. I find that, And I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I find that people really try to do as much as possible in short a time span as possible because they're afraid that they don't have time. Like, I better do it now because tomorrow's not guaranteed. That message that we've had, like, live for today because tomorrow isn't guaranteed, which I think it's been corrupted over time and things like that. When you think about the combination of the daily creative with Die Empty, what's the relationship that those two books you think has for a reader who, because Die Empty was a book that a lot of people talked about, like the idea, like I, you know, it was, and now you've got this other book that's saying like every day, here's a message. Like, what's the relationship between those two books? Maybe that the reader should take into account if they're looking at them in conjunction with, you know, your greater body of work overall.
Yeah, I would say daily, or Die Empty is the what, right? And Daily Creative is the how, maybe. If you want to get to a place where you're putting your work into the world consistently and you're not leaving your best work inside of you, but you're putting it out there, A, you're identifying it, and B, you're putting it out there in the world, you're going to need some guideposts along the way. You're going to need some help. Not motivation in the sense of rah-rah and you can do it and it's all going to work out okay, because sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes despite our best efforts and our best ambitions and we have all the right ideas and we have all the skill we need and things just don't fall our way. That's life. That's reality. We don't account for luck often in the way things turn out, you know, and that's going to happen. But that doesn't mean your body of work is compromised. The end result is not the ultimate measure of your body of work. The measure of your body of work is, did you put your work into the world? Did you strive? Did you do your best to put it into the world where it could be of use to other people? How it's received is not always your responsibility, right? As long as you're doing diligence. And so what I think Daily Creative is really that sort of daily guide, that shot in the arm, that bit of practical advice. I kind of want it to feel, and people have told me this, it feels like I'm sort of sitting over their shoulder, whispering in their ear, you know, sort of like a coach, you know, yeah, kind of behind them. Like, sometimes giving them a hug while I'm also simultaneously kicking them in the rear, you know, that's kind of what I want it to feel like. Like, it's going to be okay. And you need to get moving. You need to get moving. Go, go, go. You know, that's kind of what I want it to feel like, because I think that's what we need as creative person. That's what I need. You know, I need someone to remind me, hey, it's okay. You're doing good work. It's not all going to work out. That's fine. It's okay. It's not everything is going to work out the way you want it to. And you need to keep moving forward. And so when you ask me, you know, about Die Empty and you say that I'm prolific, I don't feel prolific. I just feel like someone who shows up every day and I do a little bit of work and I keep putting it out there for people. And over time that's turned into, wow, now 6 traditionally published books in the last 12 years and, you know, podcasts for 17 years. We're coming up on our 20-year anniversary of the Accidental Creative Podcast, which is just insane to think about. And people say it's so prolific. All it is just showing up every day and just doing a little bit of work every day, you know, and putting it out there. I think if we all do that, I think that you'd be really surprised at how much we can do.
I'm going to look up what prolific means, the etymology of the word prolific. It's probably something like producing offspring or fruit in abundance, from the word prolificus, offspring. So you've birthed a lot of things, including a good chunk of podcast episodes. I'm going to see if I can admit someone in the audience right now. Great. So see if they, it doesn't look like it's going to work. That's fine. I have a couple more questions. Number one, perfect. August 6th, you mentioned complexity. You mentioned complications. August 6th is, what if it were easy? What if it were easy? So what kind of freedom does that question allow? And what, when someone reads that entry, what's your hopeful takeaway for them?
So some of the entries were sparked by things that inspired me, and then I wanted to turn around and share them. And this was sparked by something that Tim Ferriss said on one of his podcast episodes. He said, you know, he asked the question, what if it was easy? Meaning, we tend to think that things that are valuable have to be complicated or complex. And this gets in my way a lot. When I want to do something, my immediate thought is, okay, what are all of the systems and the processes and all the things I can pull in to make this happen? And it just begins to feel overwhelming. And over time, you know, that can prevent us from doing the work. It's not that we don't want to do the work. It's that we can't imagine gearing up to do it because it's just become so complex. And that question freed me in a lot of ways, because I began thinking, okay, what if it were easy? What if I did this in a way that required the least amount of effort to achieve the most amount of value? And that's changed the way I approach podcasting. It's changed the way I approach writing books. It's changed the way I approach, you know, my speaking, my conversations with leaders, my coaching, all of that. I've automated a lot of things and I've simplified a lot of processes to make it as easy as possible to deliver that value. Because things don't have to be as complex as we make them. And what that's done, the net of that is I'm able to do more things. I'm able to produce more things because I want to, because I'm not just sort of, turned off by the very thought of doing it because of the complexity.
Last question before I let you go. There's a ton of days in here, 366 of them. Mm-hmm. Is there any Easter egg dates that we need to think about? Were there any that you're like, oh, this is an Easter egg, I'll throw that in there? Do you have any, or is it just like, nope, it just kind of is the way it flowed out?
It's kind of the way it flowed out. I will say that the beginning of the year is really about looking forward and vision and where are you going. And the end of the year is really about looking backward and sort of analyzing where you've been and then turning the corner into the new year. So there are some themes, certain times of the year. I mean, you'll find like, I think February 14th, which is Valentine's Day, is about love of process, right?
Right.
I think I made Christmas Day about gifts and the gift that we give to others through our creative work. For those of us in the U.S., sorry, Mike, but those of us in the U.S., I think January or July 4th was about creative freedom. Mm-hmm. Maybe for the international translations, we'll have to move that to different days, depending on the Independence Day. Of
3 days earlier for us. That's all.
There we go. But you know, there are certain, you will find certain themes on certain days, but Nothing that requires you to think about a specific, you know, like Independence Day or something. It just happens to be about creative freedom that day and how we embrace creative freedom.
Todd, this has been great. I know you've got a hard stop here, so we'll wrap things up. Where can people pick up the book, Daily Creative, A Practical Guide for Staying Prolific, Brilliant, and Healthy?
Daily Creative is available wherever books are sold. You can learn more about me at toddhenry.com. Please listen to the Accidental Creative Podcast wherever you listen to this show. It's available there as well. And dailycreative.net is where we've built our little community around Daily Creative.
Todd, thanks for stopping by and having a productive conversation with me today.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks to Todd for joining me. I know he had a tight schedule with the book release and a bunch of other demands on his time. Really thankful he took the time to not only speak with me, but to do it over a live stream with members of the Time Crafting Trust community. Premium members were able to watch that live. In the show notes, I share a link on how you can join Time Crafting Trust as a premium member. There's a whole bunch of other things that we list in the show notes as well, and you can find those at productivityist.com/podcast441. Now, there are a couple of ways for you to support the show other than becoming a premium member of Time Crafting Trust. One is to check out the sponsors that we spoke of today during the program. You can check them out at productivityist.com/podcast sponsors and let them know that we sent you. Another way to support the show, this one doesn't cost you a dime, is to subscribe to the show. You can get all 440 episodes prior to this one quickly and easily as a subscriber, as well as be able to get quick access to upcoming episodes, which will include Robin Hills, Mo from Boomerang. We've got Edward Sullivan and John Baird coming up, as well as a ton of other guests. We've got guests lined up all the way until early 2023. When you subscribe, you won't miss a single one. So again, where you're listening to this podcast right now, hit the subscribe button and you're good to go. I'm good to go now too, and so are you. This conversation's over. This episode's over. Thanks for joining me. And until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you, stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.